Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, Lord of the Spindrift.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Lord of the Liquid IV that I'm drinking right now. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today, we are into House of the Dragon Season 1, Episode 2 rewatch, and also bringing you some updates from the dastardly duo known as B and D.
Yeah. Jimmy, how you doing, my friend? You sound stressed.
I'm a little stressed. I'm working a lot right now. And, next week, I think we might be on a hiatus because I'm actually
going next week we're going to have to take off.
Yeah. You're having a baby, which.
So, we got two things going on. If it was just Jimmy going, if it was just me having a baby, we might make it work, but Jimmy's got to go to Denver. So put all the blame on him.
You can put the blame on me. I wish I wasn't going to.
There's Denver. An eclipse. Let's just,
there's earthquakes happening. Is magic reentering the world?
I don't know, man.
Is this the red comet moment?
There's no mention of eclipse in A Song of Ice and Fire, is there?
There has to be somewhere.
Somewhere.
There is an eclipse in Berserk.
Yeah.
It's not a fun time. I'm
trying to think if it's like, is there one in A Song of Ice and Fire? I don't know.
I'm very curious. I will do a deep dive after this.
I bet it would be in the world of Ice and Fire if there were for sure. Maybe in like that very back section where it talks about like it was a little bit of history of just like the specific locations like E.T. and stuff like that.
Yeah, or a maester throwing it around in the series somewhere.
Obviously the comet is the thing that has all of the significance.
Yeah, so. Definitely. I mean, no comets yet. But there was actually some debris that came into the atmosphere from a launch back in, I think, 2022 from China. And people saw it and they're like, what am I looking at? And people were trying to figure it out. And it turns out it was actually the debris from that spacecraft. So it's not quite a comet, but
stuff
happening in the world right now.
We got airplanes falling out of the sky. We got, doors blowing off airplanes, ships hitting bridges, space debris coming. It just feels like it's crazy.
Here's my positive comment about all this is that if you're listening to this right now and you're like me and you sometimes think, oh my God, I have no idea what I'm doing. Remember, no one does. Even the people who build airplanes.
Maybe that's our thing this year. I saw this post that was talking about 2020 versus 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, hey, Trump versus Biden. And it was like Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl, Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl. And there's like some other things as well, like some other like sports related things and other like topical things. And it's all like, well, yeah, wow, man. Well, guess we're not getting a coronavirus this year. We're just getting like massive, global storms and, businesses failing.
You know, we're getting though. Season 2 of House of the Dragon. Let's go.
Let's go. All right. for that.
Yeah, it can't be any better, right? In my opinion. At least that is the one big bright spot that I'm going to fixate on to ignore all the stress right now. Have you watched Three Body Problem, which is by our good friends Dan and Dave?
Not yet, but we are going to talk about them here in a second.
It's a banger. I'm enjoying it. I think I said that last episode, but they've been doing a little bit of media because, people are liking the Three Body Problem show. It's doing quite well, though. Netflix is known, even when a show does well, to cancel it. So we'll see if it gets to season two. But they had some comments about the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, let me get this pulled back up here. So Dan and Dave, right, D&D, said, this kind of came out in an interview. I saw it in a bunch of sites. So I'm just going to pull it up here on Twitter. We talking about the ending to Game of Thrones. We knew it would be controversial, but we had hoped it would be a little more 50-50.
Well, they were wrong.
Yeah.
Turns out you can't just abandon logic when it comes to character progression and character arcs and also time traveling after you've established that travel does take a long time in this world. Doesn't work out. People get insulted by that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we've talked at length about the problems to, the final season.
Yeah.
But I think at most the ending that we got, like I'm talking the actual end, like where all the characters end up at the very end of the story. I think maybe they looked at that and they said, maybe they thought that's what people like that would be 50-50. Right. Like they thought maybe like people would be upset with Bran as king and Jon killing Dany and, you know, Tyrion as the new hand and Arya going off. Like on an outline, that ending, I can see that being 50-50.
I think it is 50-50. Some people wanted,
yeah. The problem wasn't actually the end, like the actual ending. The problem was how we got there.
And what set it up.
The lack thereof.
I've said this. Actually, I don't know if I've ever said this on this podcast, but, you know, on the first half of the last episode with Jon killing Dany, like I have to ignore a lot about it to be okay with it because they said that that was their thing. They started that. They knew that was going to happen, I think, in season 3 or 4. So people who are assigning that to George, I don't think have heard that comment, but that is definitely something they D&D decided very early on. They wanted regardless of what Martin planned. So the first half of the last episode is some pretty good television. And then after Dany is killed, it is certainly not good television. Like the King Council is one of the most laughable events. Like it was so bad.
A good story. What?
Like, well, and also John not fighting Grey Worm and Grey Worm, I guess, just going off to a land with killer butterfly. Like, it's just we all know this, right? But I agree with you that if you look at the end point, say John's going to go beyond the wall. Arya's going to sail west. Dany dies. We'll just say Dany dies. And we'll give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. 50-50, I think, is what I see online. I see some comments saying the whole thing was crap. Bran sucks as king. And then I see the other half saying what you just said. I have no problem with it, but how we got there. And I think that that has now become the distinction between the two sides. It's not so much people who like love the ending or hate the ending, but an argument of what's valid and what isn't in the execution of it. So they kind of are missing the point, which is evident in the way that they decided to do it. I feel like these are two guys that really just lost the sauce. Like they missed out. And I know people will say it's because they ran out of source material, but they were changing things far before the source material ran out. They actually chose to go away from the source material way before it ran out. So I don't think it's a valid excuse, honestly. I think there is something to be said about them having to invent things whenever they were adapting, but they started to choose to do that far earlier on. And we can see that with Tyrion's decision not to tell Jaime or you know, the whole Jaime Tyrion exit in the tunnel. You know, I think that's when the show started having quite a bit of trouble. So yeah. Dan and Dave just seem like two dudes that just don't seem to get it.
Yeah, it needed minimally one more episode because, you know, we've talked at length about, hey, really, if you flip, I said, if you flip it around and it's suddenly the White Walkers that were fighting at the end, you know, whether that's at King's Landing or Winterfell, let's say you go down and you do all the stuff in King's Landing, Dany torches it, she's kind of evil, whatever, Cersei's gone, and then you're like, hey, we still have to go fight this war up north. You go back up, and maybe Jon takes her out at Winterfell. Like, you get to a lot of the same points. I think, one, that would have been something people would have viewed. If I had to pick one of, like, the biggest issue with Season 8, it's Episode 4. Episode 4 of Season 8 is the single worst episode of Game of Thrones. I mean, literally, it's like, hey, we just finished all of this stuff in Winterfell. Okay, I mean, think about that. It's like it took them like almost, you know, 7 seasons just to get Daenerys over to Westeros, and then suddenly Daenerys can go over, you know, from King's Landing down there, and it's like, but it was just so fast to do everything. It's like in episode 4 we leave Winterfell, basically abandon all the plot lines of like Sansa and Dany kind of like butting heads, and Jon might be king, like just toss all that stuff aside. We say a very quick goodbye to characters like Jorah Mormont, and we don't really see how that affects Dany. And then, like, it ends with, like, Missandei getting killed and, you know, like, a dragon. Which is a dragon getting killed. There also wasn't enough Cersei to really, like, build up the threat of it. It was just, it's so fat. The speed of it, honestly, mimics, for people who know, the opening 10 minutes to Rise of Skywalker. Like, it's breakneck pacing, and you're like, what the hell is even going on?
Yeah, definitely. It switched gears for sure. And, you know, whenever I see them say things like this with no retrospective about, like, you know, we messed up a little bit there, didn't we? I think there's maybe a subtle omission in this interview. If you read more of it, I feel like they kind of understand that maybe they didn't handle it the best, but you know what? And this is going to make a lot of people upset to hear. I think they're in the clear again, because Three Body Problem is a really good adaptation. Yeah. In my opinion, it does change things from the source material, but you know, another thing is that fidelity to the source material doesn't actually equate to a great piece of television. I think changes are actually mandatory. Yeah. And some of the changes they made to Game of Thrones worked. The problem that they seem to have is whenever they really don't have anything else to go off of, and they want to start creating their own points, and they have their own vision of what the story is about. So I think Three Body Problem, though, is very scoped. I think that with A Song of Ice and Fire, I see a lot of people misinterpret this series as it's just a nihilistic series, and it's simply not. I mean, there's a lot of heroism in this and a lot of hope and optimism that people just, I think, are not used to seeing presented in this way. Like, the optimism might be from someone like Samwell Tarly instead of being it, a Ned Stark who perishes, obviously, in book one. So I think that there's a lot of ways to misinterpret what George is going for. And I think D&D misinterpreted it. I think they focused on the wrong things. With Three Body Problem, there's a lot going on, but like at the end of the day, it's an existential crisis. First contact, humanity's bugs. That's kind of it. And I'm not downplaying it, by the way. I love the trilogy quite a bit. But I think it's easier to stay on track is what I'm trying to say with this adaptation. So I think that this is their redemption in many ways.
Yeah. Hey, people can do that. You know, I don't like Rian Johnson because I did not like The Last Jedi whatsoever. I thought it was complete and utter dog trash. Just trash. Terrible. But, you know, a lot of people really like Knives Out. So
I've heard it's really good. Yeah.
People really seem to like it. So, you know, you can come back from things.
Sometimes we miss. Sometimes we miss. So,
right.
I'm never one against a good redemption story, though. I think I'll always have a little bit of resentment towards the two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it still just seems like a sixth grader could have written a better ending.
Yeah. Shame ChatGPT wasn't around back then, eh?
Seriously. But yeah, you know, one more episode, I think would an episode like right there with four, if episode four was like two parts, I think it would have, the ending would not have felt nearly as rushed. I mean, a lot of people think it should have been another season, but
it should have been another season. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I think don't think about though is limitations on like the set and the production and things like this. Right. There's a reason why that fight happened at Winterfell, not King's Landing.
Yeah. It's probably easier to do.
It was easier to do, yeah. And really what you would like to see is the White Walkers moving through Westeros. An escalating threat would be a lot cooler, in my opinion. I think that's what the books would probably be more like.
Yeah, because Westeros, I believe, is the actual like set and everything. It's just like a field, right? Like, they built all of that, didn't they?
Yeah, they built it.
King's Landing, they actually film in a city. They actually film in Croatia.
Yes, and Winterfell, at least in season one, was filmed in Northern Ireland. I don't know about the other seasons. I actually, funny enough, people who are listening audio can't see this, but I actually have pens that I got at the Ren Fair this year, and they're pens that are created with the wood from a bridge and the Werewood tree from season one's props.
Well, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, and they have like a dagger for like the pen holder and stuff, and this came from the bridge in Northern Ireland, the Alta Vadi Bridge.
That'd be a fun episode to do someday. Maybe we do that as like a bonus Patreon or something. Where we just like show off all of our
merch. Have a lot. We have a lot.
Yeah,
I have a lot. Every single pair of sneakers they ever released.
I have a lot too.
Yeah, we should do a little bookshelf tour, as we call it on the book space on YouTube. We could do that. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Your actual bookshelf is far bigger. Mine's pretty small, but
I think I would be embarrassed by how much stuff I have. Honestly.
All right. Oh, hey, with that, I think that's it for news, right? Let me check the old Nada blog here just to see. You know, I always like to pull it up just to make sure.
I haven't seen anything consequential come through Nada blog. It feels like, you know, people are kind of waiting for the next big one about when's a winner, mm-hmm. after we got that kind of, you know, mysterious update.
He won an award for something. Yeah, let me pull this up.
Listen, George is constantly winning awards. God, look at that man. You know? Look at that Chad.
And then he posted this the other day too. I love this photo here. He's like, this was like the post he made after essentially the House of the Dragon trailers came out, and he posted what we believe to be the Winds of Winter thing. I think he's got full drip on there. He's I think he's letting everybody know, hey, this is my year.
Oh God, I surely hope.
Did he help write the stuff for the Elden Ring DLC?
All the lore was based on him building out the history. So every piece of history you see in Elden Ring is from his mind. Now, what happened is that Miyazaki then, I believe his name is Miyazaki, I'm not messing that up, he basically took the world and destroyed it. So George made this like illustrious land and kingdom and all this lore, and then they corrupted it, which is like kind of like the Souls games MO, is that a world in like post-world, right, if that makes sense.
Like shattered by magic or...
A shattered world.
Dystopian future, yes. Right.
Yes. So that's one of those really cool creative processes that I wish we got a little bit more information on, but everything we see in the DLC for Elden Ring will be from his lore that he created, which is cool.
Wow, so he could essentially win Game of the Year again and get some Emmys for House of the Dragon and drop Winds of Winter. Now, real quick, by the way, I was doing the math, Jimmy. Remember, because we were saying, okay, for it to come out in November, which is does fall into that timeline.
I think George it'll be announced by November now. I gotta start.
George says for it to come out, it has a minimum 6 months. The minute he says it's done. So you have November, which is 11. 11 minus 6 is 5. So that's May. So he has until May 30. Is it May 30th or May 31st? Is this April?
May 30th.
30 days in September. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, last day of May. So we're entering the thing here for it to be November.
May has 31 days.
31, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Figured, crack the code. We cracked the code. There we go.
So we're hitting the...
Listen, if he announces it in November, I'll still take it as a win. I'm just saying.
We'll take it.
I will revise and edit all past audio clips of me saying it'll be out. All
right. Hey, let's we'll dive into the episode today, which is House of the Dragon, Season 1, Episode 2, The Rogue Prince. So 6 months later, Daemon has illegally occupied Castle Dragonstone. Prince Admiral Kragis Drahar, known as the Crab Feeder, menaces the Stepstone's archipelago at the Essos Triarchy. The small council dismisses Rhaenyra's suggestion to show force and instead relegate her to appointing a new Kingsguard knight. Ignoring others' advice, she chooses Sir Criston, the only knight with actual battle experience. Sir Otto sends his teenage daughter, Lady Alicent, to console the grieving king. She advises Viserys to discuss his kingly duty to remarry with Rhaenyra. Lord Corlys and his wife, Princess Rhaenys, propose that Viserys unite their Valyrian houses by marrying their 12-year-old daughter, Laena. Meanwhile, the small council learns that Daemon, proclaiming himself the true heir, stole a dragon egg and intends to marry his mistress, Missaria, as a second spouse. Otto and a small detachment sail to Dragonstone to retrieve the egg. Rhaenyra follows on her dragon, Syrax, and forces Daemon to renounce his false claim and return the egg. Viserys announces his intention to wed Alicent, angering Corlys, who proposes an alliance to Daemon.
Yeah, this is an episode where I knew a lot of people, when we were doing the live reactions almost 2 years ago now, we were talking about it. People were like, slower episode, builder episode. But when you actually think about how important this episode is in the grand scheme of things, it's actually kind of insane. This is one just full of very subtle shots that make this show great television. Alicent picking her nails as she's basically hitting on Viserys, and you can tell that she's extraordinarily nervous. The subtle facial shots that we get of Otto whenever he hears that someone else has offered someone up to marry Viserys, and you can tell he's freaking out. And then little things like Rhaenyra is listening to the candidates to be knighted, and then she ends up moving the pawn of the house that it represents up to the forefront before she goes up, so they know what house they are. Like little things like that, dude. Yeah. Oh my God. And then you have the Valeria explanation and the model. Dude, I love it. I loved it well, so much.
Speaking of the model, by the way, you know, this was the moment where I was like, oh man, it's back. Because for whatever reason, and I don't really understand it, I don't know why shows like to do this. Wheel of Time did the same thing. A lot of shows do this where they just don't do an intro on the pilot. I've never understood it. I think it's stupid. I don't like it. I mean, you're going to have the intro on everything else. I know a lot of times like, well, they don't have it ready for this. Like, just add it in. Like, you know, especially with something like this, because the intro is fucking awesome. Okay.
There and was I remember a lot of controversy about this. People were like, they should have done a new intro music.
No. Meanwhile,
me, I'm humming along.
Loving it. I hope for Dunkin' Egg, they redo it, but it's like different. You know, it's like, ooh, it's more, you know, it feels like you're at a festival.
Yeah, like a flute or fiddle, maybe.
Yeah, you know, like a hedge knight thing.
I like
that. Is it as good as the Game of Thrones intro where you're like going around and you can see the cities being built and everything? No. But it's still cool. The blood of the dragon flows. It's super, you know, it
ties in thematically to what the story is.
But I love that it was the same song because I remember going into this was like a big deal. We were like, before we had any idea what the song was, and I remember you can go back and listen to all the episodes, and I was saying, no, it needs to be the exact same intro. Because I thought they would, and they ended up doing it because it's like Harry Potter. It's like Star Wars. It's, you know, Star Wars. It's the same theme, all the different things, as it should be. That's the Star Wars theme. This is the Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones theme. Glad they use it. Now, they want, like, Dunkin' Egg, that feels like something a little smaller. It's not, like, the full realm on display. You want to do that. But Aegon's Conquest? Nope. Better use it, too.
Yeah, it's a brand. It's a signal that you're about to see something that is going to live up to a certain standard that's been set. Also reminds you, you know, as a viewer, it reminds you of all your memories of sitting down with the popcorn bucket and pouring your drink and getting ready for Game of Thrones on a Sunday. So it has a huge nostalgia pull. I'm okay with them reusing the song, and I actually like the intro quite a bit.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, X-Men 97 is out, which is like, hey, they're re-bringing back that classic cartoon or whatever. And like on TikTok and social media and everything, it is frame for frame. Like, I mean, it's like 95% because they added some new animations here and there and stuff. But I mean, it is like the exact same theme, the exact same. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, we're back. Like, I mean, and that was the same thing with this. Everyone was like, as soon as that intro hit, everyone's like, we're back. Yep.
Oh, dude. I remember coming on that live stream. I was kicking my feet. I was screaming. I was so excited.
Yep.
You know, I just feel as if for the folks that wanted something original, I can also understand their side of things. But the intro of itself is setting a tone, which we just kind of talked about. But regardless of the intro, what comes after has to be good, because season 8 had the best intro in the world. And, you know, we still had episodes that were very subpar. So I don't think it can sway an episode to being great or poor. I think it's important, but it only to a certain extent. So for me, it was like one of those things where it's like, okay, this is the intro. I love it. It's reminding me all the things I love. To me, it makes sense. Let's move on. Like, let's get into it. But there were some people who really stuck on this.
I know. We ran a poll. I do believe we ran a poll. I'm sure I could go find it. And I think it was like 80%, 20% said they preferred the Game of Thrones intro to the House of the Dragon.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know?
So, okay. Well, with that, you know, as we continue on, like you said, this episode is a little bit slower. And, you know, we ranked them. I'd have to go back and look. But I imagine I'm kind of thinking we actually said this might have been the worst episode of the season. Not that any of the episodes are bad. But we know the action picks up quite a bit. And the drama picks up quite a bit in all of the episodes to come. But I think this one is probably towards the bottom because it is probably the slowest episode.
Yeah. I mean, so as far as like big events, action packed things happening, you know, it doesn't have all that. But I think I argued this when it first came out. It's like, I think it's still a very important episode.
No, it is. And yeah. There's no episode I dislike.
With some of the shots, it really makes up for it too. Like the crab feeder opening is, it's a spectacle to see. And then on top of that, getting to see, like I said, those little subtle shots. I think they did they made up for a lot of the lack of action in this episode with the production and the cinematography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'm just looking at shots here. Unfortunately, StreamYard won't let me share it, even though we're recording and not live streaming. So I can't like show you what it is I'm seeing. But there's a shot, like you said, where they're looking at the Kingsguard members. And I have it frozen. They give you the negative symbol on HBO Max, so you know how much time's left. So minus 54, 47 minutes. But it's the shot of the eagle or the Kristen Cole, like the House Cole, and they're looking at all the different things. And but it's just such a cool shot where they have that board, like you said, and then they're asking all the Kingsguard members who they want to be or who they want to pick. And I'm sure Otto is actually probably pleased that she picks Kristen Cole, considering Kristen Cole knocked Damon off of the thing. And then you see Kristen Cole goes with them later in the episode, and that's where Damon sort of makes fun of him and calls him Crispin, which we've called him since. But then there is the extremely awkward thing about this episode, which is this episode does do like awkward tension, and they do a great job of showing you just how sort of awkward it is in some of these scenes. Like when Viserys is walking around with Lane, and you're just like, ugh. And you can tell, you can see the look on his face where he's like, I do not want any part of this. Like this is,
A good signifier that even though we should be frustrated with the inaction of Viserys, that deep down, he's still like a decent guy. Like he's not a bad dude. Also his Targaryen vest he's wearing in this shot, this doublet is so sick.
Oh yeah. I will say later at the end of this episode, this is also a big House Valyrian episode, which it by is. The way, House Valyrian is pretty new to, obviously not us because we're real, but the TV audience. So this was like a good way to kind of introduce just how important and significant, because we saw them in the last episode, but it was like, okay, a lot of people didn't really get them and they aren't very prevalent in Game of Thrones. I don't even know if they're mentioned in the actual television show, but they are around in the books, and they might actually have some roles to play. But their house has obviously dwindled to since what it was. But the look that Otto Hightower gives Corlys Velaryon when he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna choose Alicent Hightower as my as my wife," like the look he gives him is just straight up like, bitch. I mean,
his facial reactions and gestures are so good. Like I think out of we were trying to evaluate all of these different actors, huge cast of characters, and we talked a lot about Allison and Rhaenyra's portrayals, both the young actresses and then the older ones as well. But man, Steve Toussaint and then the gentleman who is playing Otto Hightower have done so much with so little, and just the way they look at each other is astounding. Whenever Corlys walks into the small council at the beginning of the episode, he like commands a presence, and Otto hits him with that line where it's like, just because you're on the council does not put you on equal footing of a king. And it's like, ooh, okay. Like that's the roadblock that we're seeing here. Because if Otto Hightower was not there, I think Corlys Velaryon would be basically running the Seven Kingdoms. I mean, that's what it kind of feels like.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I would say at this moment in time, to kind of put it into perspective for people, maybe House of the Dragon is, maybe people are watching, because I know we have a lot of new listeners every time we get closer to a new season. So maybe you're like, hey, I'm going to listen to these guys and watch the episodes. And remember, this is all we're doing. This is a spoiler, House of the Dragon season one, but certainly not further on. But House Valyrian, I would put them to the same level as House Lannister is during Game of Thrones. I mean, they're that significant. They're a major house. That is probably the best comparison you could make for them, is they are essentially as powerful as House Lannister is during Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and one of the last, there were Dragon Lords, and they came up. They mentioned that in this episode as well. And I believe it's the Maester, right, who is saying that, like, well, if we have you marry Lena, then it shows that the Dragon Lords are united, and it's great for uniting the realm. Yada yada yada.
He should have married her.
Yeah, it would have been creepy, but he probably should have. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Yeah. Dude, you know what, another thing that I've noticed about the show?
She goes on to marry Damon, so.
Yeah.
You know, it's like she does marry Damon. Like, that's, it's just because, like, in the show, she's like so young when that first time we see her, then the second time we see her, she's older, and you know, it's like, oh yeah, well, Damon married her. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and I don't know. So clearly it's wrong, but we are talking about a fictional universe where, like, that is kind of like, so you could say it would have been the right move, like the correct move to do so, right? It's always hard to say things like that because it's so, like,
how old is Allison here? Is Allison 16?
I think Allison's been aged up a bit here. I mean, I think she's somewhere between 16 and 19 is my guess. I don't know what the show is portraying her as and what she is in the books, but yeah, I mean, she certainly looks older, I will say. I mean, it's still kind of creepy, obviously, but it's not, you know, it's not a child in the sense of, like, they're actually in their teens, so.
Yeah. Oh, no, she's quite a bit older, actually.
Is she? Okay.
According to this, hold on. Actually, the show makes, is that right? The show makes her younger. That can't be right.
That's strange.
Yeah, because it says, I'm doing, oh no, they were married in 106. Okay. Sorry. It is, so.
You're good.
106 minus 88. So she's actually 18.
Okay.
When she marries Viserys.
Hey, good on you, George. Finally.
Yeah. Finally, well, that's a huge difference. I thought maybe she was supposed to be like 14. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, it's like, okay. You know,
I think in retrospect, when George wrote Fire and Blood many years after starting Game of Thrones, he's like, I probably should age these characters up a good bit. Because he even said that's one of his biggest mistakes in the series is that he wishes that he would have made the characters older. You know, he was also thinking about a 5-year gap and all these other things. Right. But
well, most characters, most of the girls in A Song of Ice and Fire do marry when they're like 14.
Yeah, and which is like
that's life expectancy used to be a lot younger, you know, during the time period he's trying to write. So, I get it. But yeah, so right. I mean, Allison's 18, so it's, you know, it's not.
But the Valyrians and the Targaryens being together is definitely a better unity than Hightower.
For sure.
Though Hightower is very rich and powerful at this point, House Hightower. I actually saw somebody compare Hightower to Littlefinger back whenever there was someone who was criticizing the show. And they were saying that basically Allison spending the night and then coming in with her garb and all these things. They basically said that Otto is like clearly a climber.
Like, oh, yeah.
Baelish. And I said, well, not really, though, because he's rich as hell. Like, I think that the
richest he's hand of the king.
Yeah, he is literally already at the top. Second in line. And they have all the money in the world. And that's why whenever she shows up in the same dress, everyone knows what happened because she's someone who has plenty of dresses. She's not a beggar. So I actually thought that like those little notes were really awesome. And I saw people criticizing him. And then, of course, my book snob comes out. I'm like, they're actually rich in the books. And, you know.
You know, it is interesting to think about like what Otto's plan would have been, because obviously I don't think nobody expected Emma Arryn to die. From childbirth. So if everything goes according to plan, then Emma Arryn gives birth to a boy, and then Otto Hightower would actually have this daughter he needs to marry off in order to help him secure something.
He would probably want to marry her to baby, right?
No, because she'd be like 36. By the time the baby's 18.
Actually, Lena probably would be the choice then, right?
She'd be 12, so a little bit older. No, I don't know. You could marry once that baby comes of age, because they might marry the baby when it's 14 or, you know, 15. So you could choose anybody. So really, he'd have to be searching to marry somebody off. He'd sort of have to be searching to marry Allison off to somebody.
I think Otto Hightower would have probably remarried and tried to have another girl.
Yeah.
He would have been like,
yeah, because I don't think, you know, I don't think he was certainly planning on that happening. I don't think anybody thought so. It just sort of all falls into place at once.
Yeah, it really does. And throughout this first two episodes, the thing that I've most noticed and really been obvious to me, I guess, man, Rhaenys is a shadow over this whole thing, isn't she? She's constantly watching from the back. She is not completely aligned with sides. I mean, even later in the episodes, we see her and Corliss even have some disagreements as well. And I think that she is one of my favorite, if not my favorite character in the show, actually. I love how much she has agency.
Do you think she looks, I mean, obviously she loves him as her husband, but it does kind of feel like, even though they're both blood of the dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a difference between Targaryen blood of the dragon and Valyrian blood of the dragon. I think even she kind of noticed.
There's a feud between them.
Because you can tell, like, somewhat she's sort of, it's just the way, it's just part of it's like, well, she's just like an independent, you know, type of a woman. And like, you know, that is sort of like her personality. Like, you know, she's just a powerful woman as is. But I think there is a little bit too of like, I was supposed to be queen. And I'm, you know, King Jaehaerys's daughter.
And like the Valyrians would have never survived if they hadn't listened to the Targaryens.
Right.
Right. They would have died in Valyria as well. So the Valyrians followed the Targaryens. And in that way, I think it kind of makes them almost in debt some ways. Mm-hmm. Right. But the Targaryen always feels like the A side of the equation.
For sure. Even here.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why Alicent seems to be so like preposterous in the back half of the season to the other characters, is that's like a non Targaryen is trying to play this game and trying to make these moves and make decisions. Like, even Otto Hightower has enough kind of reservation when he speaks to Viserys that he still, like, you know, secedes to him as king. But Alicent really takes a hold of things later on, in Otto as well, whenever he is feeling more emboldened by his position. But I just think anytime a Targaryen's in a relationship or a room or a dispute, they're always the A side, in this era, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that. We definitely see that in today's episode as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm just going to kind of skip around here, unless you have another like big point you want to talk about.
No, I thought Rhaenys was awesome in this episode, and I just love how she's just constantly watching over everything and watching it happen and is her own person, which obviously happens. You know, we see that big agency on display later in the season whenever she brings the dragon up. So,
yeah. So I will say this episode, by the way, it does feel like they set up a lot of points in the beginning of the episode to make you think it's going to go one way. And then the end, pretty much everything goes the opposite way with the whole, like, oh, I'm going to marry Alicent. Like, even Rhaenyra too. Remember, Viserys and Rhaenyra have this big conversation and it makes it seem like, okay, she's maybe not going to choose Laenor Valerian, but he's going to choose like somebody else. Cause it's this whole thing. And then he chooses her. So then also remember Rhaenyra and Alicent have a conversation too, and you know that Alicent knows the entire time that, like, oh yeah, your dad and I are kind of a thing.
Yeah, and we also, at least in my opinion, some people won't see it like this, but I think that this episode actually does make Alicent seem sympathetic still, even with the deceit that's going on, because of the little shots of her picking her nails and the way Otto looks down on her and kind of like postures himself over top of her when they speak. It's just, you feel like she's a pawn in this game, and then eventually she starts playing the game herself because she really doesn't have any other options. Also, I think she feels like the things that she's went through, that she's kind of do these things, but that's later on. It's a little tough to watch because I will say through two episodes, I really believed in the Rhaenyra and Alicent relationship and the friendship. I felt it. And I think the first episode did a good job of establishing that, just the way they bantered back and forth and the way Alicent is trying to make Rhaenyra, you know, more courtly and reading to her. And again, these are two people in the last episode who said they didn't want anything to do with the crown. Rhaenyra didn't want the crown. Alicent certainly wasn't a player in the game. And we're watching them kind of get pushed in there.
Yeah. Well, and Rhaenyra is put in such a terrible spot at the end of this episode, because not only has she lost her mother, now she feels like she's lost the faith from her father, like in her confidence, even though her father did tell her, you know, hey, you're still my heir and all of these things. And then also she feels like she just lost her best friend. And then she just had to go deal with her uncle Daemon, who's, you know, stealing dragon eggs and doing it. So there's still like the tension, you know, just kind of toying.
That's just a weird relationship, because she's the exact thing that she is being granted, the thing that he wants the most, where he's willing to steal a dragon egg and say Missaria's pregnant and run away with her. And
right.
I mean, essentially open rebellion against his king.
Right. Also, by the way, isn't a Dragonstone shouldn't that currently be Rhaenyra's location?
It would, yeah, actually that's a good point, right?
Because they said it's like abandoned at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. Interesting.
And Daemon went and took it because it's the...
Yeah, and maybe that's him taking her thing, and he feels she took his status as heir. I mean, there's a lot of things there. But you see also a little bit that Daemon is not willing to kill Rhaenyra because he doesn't want to kill Rhaenyra. So,
no.
And it's also very confusing to me. Like, Daemon doesn't seem like he really actually wants to be king, but I feel like he thinks that he is the only person...
Who deserves to be
king. That has an idea of what a Targaryen king should be. And I think he is disappointed in his brother at points. So maybe I'm going a little far saying he doesn't want to be king, but I think he wants to be king far more because he thinks he knows how to rule and to lift the Targaryen family up. Because the thing he cares about more than anything is Targaryen name.
Which is why Aemon and Daemon, like as adversaries, is so perfect as we get to Aemon later in the season, everything, because they are kind of, they literally are like the same person.
Oh, they got the crazy gene from the Targaryen.
In some ways, you could almost make an argument that Aemon is actually like a better person than Daemon.
Well, he's had less time to mess up too, because he's younger. I think if you give him time, and we will, we'll see him do other terrible things. But they are very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay, I'm going to keep jumping around the episode here. Yeah, a lot of this also, I think, in addition to setting up the House Valyrian, as we did get a little bit more, I think, like going to Dragonstone and having that big thing there. Because Dragonstone, you know, it's one of those things where you don't really think about it as much in Game of Thrones, because it just seems like, well, like it's coming in and out of it, and you don't really, I don't think, get the significance of it, that it's like, no, Dragonstone is the place where the heir goes, like that is the place you're supposed to go. Obviously in Game of Thrones, Stannis thinks he's being sent, it's like, that's Stannis, that's the place where you're supposed to go. He's like, no, it should be Storm's End now, which he has a point. Maybe they get rid of Dragonstone and Storm's End now that the Baratheons have it, Storm's End should be the place where the heir goes. So, yeah, like you said, Daemon going there is also kind of like, well, I'm claiming Dragonstone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that kind of stuck out to me on this episode as well, like with the whole Dragonstone scene and Rhaenyra coming in. Which is
super sick, by the way.
Oh, it's so dope. And there's a callback to that later in the season that's really great. And we'll get there eventually. But Rhaenyra in the small council saying, Father, we have dragon riders. Let's go handle. You know, let's go handle the crab feeder. Let's go handle it. And I think that this is a really big distinction, and where Rhaenyra probably sees some of Daemon's points, because Daemon also is saying, we are dragon riders, we are dragon lords, like we are above these people. But Viserys seems to be very apprehensive towards dragons, using dragons. And I think he understands the responsibility that comes with them. Because as, of course, he remarks to Rhaenyra that these are powers we should have never have meddled with. And I think that he has a trepidation of being too reliant on those things. And also the harm that they can cause. And I think he's also aware that they're hard to control, which we see happen at the end of this season. So you almost look at Rhaenyra and she's like, Father, we have dragons. Like, why wouldn't we use them? Send your dragon riders. And you're kind of like, yeah, why wouldn't you use your dragon riders? And I think Daemon would be in favor of that as well. So she's, even though it seems like they're on opposite sides, you can kind of see that there is a tie there. And it's not that surprising that they end up on the same side by the end of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And one other person I want to talk about here as we sort of wind down, because this episode there's not like a ton really that goes on it.
A lot of
Missaria.
What an important and cool character in the story, and what a horrendous accent.
Yeah, we talked about this, and I remember people bashing it when it first came out, and then some people pushing back and being like, oh, you shouldn't bash it, but it's just not good.
It's real bad. It sticks out like a sore thumb, because everything else in this episode is like amazing. And by the way, I like her in the story, like her purpose and plot points, all that stuff, really good. It's literally just the accent.
And if I remember correct, didn't we look this up and we like watched some clips of her talking, and it's clearly a directed choice.
Accent. Yes,
yeah, to make it seem over. Yeah,
Yeah.
So hopefully they tone that down a little bit. And
we've been saying that. Yeah, we're like, if they just,
because it's the biggest flop of. I mean, really, I loved like almost everything in House of the Dragon. Season one, like we've talked about, like, oh, how well they did everything, but it is the one thing they messed up.
Yeah, they messed it up pretty royally. I don't like it. I don't know who saw that and was like, yeah, that's it. I don't know who, but I hate it. I really don't like it. But you know, whatever. I mean, like I said,
I thought we'd actually see more of her in season one, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely is featured, but it's not as heavy as I would have expected. I don't know. We can't really speculate on season two without spoiling things in season two. But like overall, I like her in the show. I like the actress, and I like Masari as a character. But it's just every time she's on screen, it's really jarring to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the last little scene here too, which was kind of like ooh, the little cliffhanger, was that it felt like Daemon and Corlys Velaryon are conspiring together against Viserys, but really they are actually doing something for the realm in that they're going to go deal this. But if you go out down and defeat a big enemy, you'll gain some points.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And
yeah, it's a political move.
It is very much posturing. And isn't it kind of sad? Everyone's just kind of assuming Viserys is going to die. And then of course his pinky is rotting. By the way, the maggot plate they put his hand in almost made me throw up. I forgot about
you.
That.
Yeah, you forget about all those little things along the way. Remember later, we'll see the rats. We'll see the rats. Yeah.
Oh, God, dude. Whenever the guy literally sticks his hands in what I can only assume are real maggots, I mean, I was like, dude, you couldn't pay me enough to do that.
Every episode, remember his wounds just get a little bigger and bigger, and you know, just he slowly gets more decrepit until the end when he's.
Yeah, his decay
is. Like, the mask. Bad. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that's a good place to stop. Like you said, today it is actually, I believe also, I was looking at the run times. I think it is actually the shortest episode of season one, by the way. So next time we will be back with episode 3, which will be in 2 weeks. And I don't know if I'll be on that one or not. Jimmy might have to do that one with somebody else. We'll see. Baby's supposed to come next Wednesday. So, oh, and by the way, let me give a shout out here real quick. I want to give this out. I can't remember if this came up when it was announced. When I first announced it, one of our listeners hit me up and said they were also having a baby. It is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His name is Sir Richard, and he is supposed to also have a baby girl born the exact same day. He said he sent me like months and months ago, and I forgot to say something about it. And so he messaged me again. Yeah. So I was like, so wow, crazy.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations.
See, there's a lot of bad things happen, but also some good.
There is some good. So, with that, we will see you, I think, in 2 weeks. Episode 3, Second of His Name, which is a freaking action heavy episode.
Yeah, some dope scenes, and very, very excited. And we'll talk about whether or not some of the battle strategies were realistic or not, because I remember people getting very hung up on that. And I cannot roll my eyes hard enough whenever these things happen. I think it's the most like pretentious thing. Eh, whatever. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it. So awesome. All right. Well, with that, guys, as always, remember, we'll see you next time. Thanks for playing the Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Episode 3, Second of His Name.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.